A public park.
The Internet, 1996 World Exposition. A World's Fair for the Information Age.
So why is Eau Claire, Michigan an Eden for apples? The climate there, the soil type, and the topography of the area is especially well suited for apple culture, and Herb Teichman will explain that to us in this episode of Expo Radio. Your climate here, obviously you have... It must have a really good climate for growing these things. I see that there's a large industry here, and you look like you have particularly good soil. And what is there about the climate and the soil here that makes this area around Eau Claire, Michigan, such an excellent place to raise apples?
Well, the glacier action that happened here many, many years ago caused the uneven terrain. We're not flat by any means. In fact, these irregularities in the surface of the earth help us in ridding us of spring frost. During blossom time, warm air is lighter than cold air. Cold air being heavier settles into these valleys, and it causes us to be able to plant varieties of selections of fruit that you wouldn't normally plant at this latitude. In fact, on the other side, on the west side of Lake Michigan, we're on the east side, next to the shore of Lake Michigan. We have the protection of that water, too. That great body of water, 65, 70 miles of water, maintains a fairly constant temperature, summer and winter. There may be a little variation, but as the cold airs in February and January come across that water, it warms up the air temperature, and then it picks up moisture and dumps it here in a form of snow, which is insulating the soil, insulating the ground, and also giving us advantage of warmer temperatures. After that air gets 30, 40 miles inland, then it reverts back to its original sub-zero or colder temperatures. Same thing happens in the summer. We have cooler, damper climate here in the summer than you would on the other side of the lake at this latitude.
All these things are beneficial.
Oh, in the case of the snow, how much snow do you get here on the average?
We have around 64 inches. We have a weather station, a cooperative weather observation station for the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration here on the farm. I've kept it now. My father started in 1924. It's been one of the longest continuous weather records in the state right here on the farm. So we're quite accurate in our measurements and our observations. The coldest temperature ever recorded was a year ago, January 19th, 1994. We got 22 below zero, and that raised heck with our peaches, nectarines, and apricot trees. We lost about half of our production. And it, I'm sure, damaged other fruits, but that was a record low, and the record high was 107. And that only happened one time. But for this latitude, we have a very constant record of temperatures. We aren't very too hot. We have about 35 inches of precipitation throughout the year. It's an ideal climate for the production of fruit, and we don't have the desert that we do in the western part, northwest of the United States, desert climate where you can irrigate and have clear days every day and plenty of water through irrigation. We have to depend upon the annual precipitation. However, we do have wells and do irrigate at times, but we try to avoid irrigation if we can help it.
Well, could you tell us about a few of your favorite varieties, why you like them, and maybe show them to us?
Well, sure. I have one called Ashmead's Kernel. It is a very interesting apple to me. Ashmead's Kernel. They're, again, a very masculine apple. It's rusty. We call it russet. That's a term they use on an apple like this. It's more like a sandpaper finish than a glossy. But the apple is meant to be eaten in small bites, not a, horse it down. And it's a great one for cheese to complement a wine cheese tasting. Ashmead's Kernel. That's one of my favorites. I'd like to have you try it, if you will. Also, the Cava Blanc. The Cava Blanc is a very interesting apple. It's higher in vitamin C than an orange. And I'm not a scientist, and I have no way of measuring vitamin C content, but that's what I heard the big boys say. Here's an apple that's soon becoming obsolete, Northern Spy. At one time, that was fifth in production in the nation. It's one of the best baking apples you can get.
Northern Spy, do you have any idea where it got that name?
It came from the Lake Champlain area, New York, and across into Canada. The Northern Spy was known to keep well. It actually improved with age, meaning it stored well and it actually improved. And toward springtime, you could still salvage a good pie or sauce or tart from this. And it's a good complement to others. In fact, some of the better pies you'll find in some of the freezer areas and the stores, they specify Northern Pie. It will sell for more money.
Ah, Northern Pie. I misunderstood you. Okay.
Northern Spy.
Yeah.
Northern Spy, not pie.
Oh, okay.
S-P-Y.
A few years ago, there was this big Aller scare. Okay, can you tell our listeners what is that all about from your perspective?
Well, the Aller scare, I think, was a mistake. I believe that we're looking for something sensational, and actually at the expense of others, we put it out and make a name, but it really hurt the industry terribly. I have not used Aller. We suffered along with all those who did use, because apples were the target. People were pouring juice and apples and destroying apples, pouring juice down the drain, these kinds of things. And that was terrible for us. We suffered along with those who did use it. And I'm not saying that I'm against using Aller. I don't think Aller was a problem at the beginning. I don't believe it was. We have certain chemicals that we use on this. We're bordering on organic here on this farm. We do spray only when we have a problem. We have traps in the orchard. When those traps indicate to us that the count is high enough in insect damage or potential damage, then we apply the most beneficial pesticide we can apply. But we have not found a market for wormy apples. If we ever find a market for wormy apples, we'd be rich, because we'd save all the expense of spraying and have all that big money from those apples.
What do you think the responsible kind of pesticides to use on apples are? And I agree with you. I don't think you're going to find a market for wormy apples. I think that's sort of a fantasy, to be honest with you. But really the question is, what's responsible use of pesticides for apple production and what isn't responsible? Do you have an opinion on that?
Well, we term that responsible method of applying pesticides as integrated pest management. We integrate the pests and the management of these pests with the beneficial insects. When we find during the population of bees, when the blossom is being fertilized and pollinated, at that point we don't spray. We stay away from that, and we do also from times when we see beneficial insects. Actually, if you leave things go, oftentimes they'll correct themselves. We get too quick to pull a trigger on many cases. We used to be that way, but today we're very, very cautious. And as a result, we'll find the finish on our apples may not be quite as nice as it was at one time, but I think that the country and the environment is all healthier because of what we're doing.
Well, and the chemicals aren't free either, right? So that's a natural thing, too. You'd like to conserve the expense of doing it.
Well, the chemicals are very, very expensive. If it would be for spraying, we would have a greater profit by a lot. And I often think of chemicals much like if you had an illness and you went to the doctor and you selected your very finest doctor, and he make a prescription. You would take that prescription then, if you followed his direction, to the pharmacist. The pharmacist would fill it. That's a chemical. You would ingest that chemical. If you took it all, or if you misused it, you'd probably get sicker or die. If you use it according to the prescription, you're going to benefit from it. And we all do this. And I think of it's the same thing when I'm trying to treat an apple for an illness. If I try to treat that apple to keep it from being damaged or destroyed or killed, I'm doing the same thing as the pharmacist and the doctor.
Thank you.
talk about some of these varieties that you have here. You have a big group of them here in the cooler that people can come and select from. Only a few of each, but many different kinds.
Well, as we head down at the Cahuilla Blanc, we talked about a bit. That was back in Louis XIII's garden. That goes way back 16th century. High in vitamin C than an orange. Unusual apple. A lot of old European still life paintings use that as the subject in a fruit bowl. When you see an apple in an old painting that had these ridges like this, most likely it's of European origin and old. And these imperfections you see on here come from the lack of spray. We spray very little, no more than we have to, because we find most of the folks who are interested in organic are interested in antiques or the beginning of apples. And they think that's a compliment to the apple, to have those things. And the other thing is, we have folks that come here and say, oh, I'd like to plant an apple in my yard. Which would you recommend? Well, as you look at these apples we have here on display, you can find those that are less likely to have imperfections. Those would be most resistant to insects and diseases.
So a Jonanac, is that like a...
Jonanac would be a little bit that way. Now here's one called Knobbed Russet. You wouldn't believe that apple could be sold. Knobbed Russet.
Looks like a potato.
It does. That apple is so juicy, or so unusual, spicy. I don't know if I'm covering that. I can make a better. But Knobbed Russet, you've got to work up your nerve to get a bite of that, don't you?
What's it taste like?
Well, it's very, very, very spicy. It's good, but you don't wolf that down. You, and to peel it, you'd go out of your world, wouldn't you? You just gotta. In the dark, it'd be easy to eat, but not in the daylight.
Science fiction movie, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that apple is a very good apple. And if it had an imperfection, you wouldn't see it.
That's true.
These are... Pippin is a term for pit. It's a seedling apple from England. Strawberry.
Seedling apple used growing from seed stock instead of from a vine.
Mm-hmm. It's a seed stock. It came originally from seed. It wasn't man-made or any cross man-made. John Licious is a cross that... it's a modern apple. It's not an antique. Jersey Mac is a modern. This is an old one. In fact, this is one of the apples that my dad had requested to see, and I saw on the margin of that catalog that I referred to earlier. This apple, Jeffress. This apple is an old antique apple, antique variety my father had. Gideon is one I only have one sample of. It's a very beautiful apple, very waxy. Came out of Minnesota. There was a fellow did that work on that apple many years ago. It's bears very heavy. It's a nice apple. It'd be a good apple to have in your yard.
That raises a little question. Let's say you own some land and you find an apple tree on it that you think maybe it's at an old house site that you know is pretty old, and it looks like it's maybe a halfway worthwhile tree to improve or work with. What would you do to bring new life into that old tree?
Well, of course, pruning it. One of the most things they neglect is pruning. Pruning and caring for it that way, it'll renew it. Trees need to have pruning. They need to have new wood. Otherwise, you'll have old, worn out, just like a factory. Machinery gets old, you got to replace it, update it. And same thing with apple buds on a tree, in the leaf. It's got to be renewed. And nature has a way of doing that through ice storms and wind and things such as that. But we can help in that case by pruning, selectively pruning. It's a very interesting thing. We've got some apple trees here on the farm now, well over 60 years old, still producing, doing well, but the variety is becoming obsolete. Even though it's producing good fruit, the variety is being more difficult to sell. So, for that reason, we'll have to take it out. Start something new. Well, these apples, snow apple, that is a very ugly apple. But inside that apple is pure white. This apple has a very, it looks like a Jonathan, but it isn't. When I cut the apple, you'll see the inside flesh is white. So white, it's just an unusual white. And it makes a very smooth sauce. So there's a
pumpkin sweet, that's large and...
This pumpkin sweet will look transparent when it gets real ripe. You can almost look like it's watery, but it's still good. And I don't see one that's really typey, that transparent look. But there, it begins to look kind of like this, watery. Mm-hmm. It's still good. Very sweet. Pumpkin Sweet was an earlier apple. And for those who like sweet apples, that was one of the first early season sweet apples. This is called Strawberry Shenango. Came from Shenango County, New York, originally. Very delicate apple. Makes good sauce. Ripens in August. And I caution people against looking at it real hard, because it'll bruise if you look at it hard. We don't have many Cox Orange Pippin. There's only one left, and that's just the sample. Carol doesn't sell the last apple in a bin if she can help it, because there's always that person coming a long distance, and they want to see it one more time.
Is that Akane? Is that a Japanese or
no, Akane is a good apple. This webbing on it is typical of that variety. That's not an imperfection. That's a webbing on that apple. There's another apple called Haralson from Minnesota that has that. But this apple, Akane, is from Japan, and it's a sweet apple. Has a little bit of tang or tartness to it. I like it. It's a modern apple. Probably shouldn't be in this collection up here, but we don't have a lot of them. We're starting a new orchard of them because there are people who like it.
It is really beautiful, and one thing I remember from one time I was in Japan for a couple of weeks is a very different attitude towards fruit. Here you come and buy a bushel or a big bag of them, and there it's not unusual to see one particularly beautiful apple in a box with by itself that might sell for, you know, $8-$10 U.S.
Yeah, I know. We have I've adopted some of those habits. So we have been raising apples in a bag. After the blossoms have been fertilized by the insect or bees fertilized, then we'll put it in the bag and leave it in the bag until about 2 weeks before harvest. We take it out of the bag. It'll turn a beautiful, it's kind of an eggshell color in the bag, no sunlight, no on it. So it'll turn then a very soft color. And those would sell for $2-$3. We had them for $1 a pound at one time, but we couldn't do it because it was very expensive. But you put an apple on a bag and then take the bag off the apple, and the labor involved is terrible, expensive.
Apples play prominently in a lot of old stories, like in fairy tales and in myths and all that. Do you have any idea, based on your knowledge of old apples, in the story Snow White, the Wicked Witch gives her a poison apple that's red on one side and green on the other, correct? What kind of apple back in Germany, maybe in like the year 1500 or whatever, when that was set, what kind of apple would maybe Snow White have been looking at? Do you have any conjecture on that?
Well, there's an apple called Api, A-P-I. Api, it's mentioned many, many years ago. It's still available today. We have it here in our collection. And some of these apples and prunes and pears and all fruits are mentioned back at during the early years and in Europe. And I don't know where this would have come from, this apple. I don't have at least idea, but it's refreshing to think about it. It's a kind of a nice thought as to where it might have come from, what it might have been. But I do know that this is one of the oldest of all apples. It's a red and it's Api.
Do you grow those here?
Yes, we have them here. Mm-hmm. I don't know as I have them in the selection here today, but I do have the trees and do grow it.
You've been listening to the Internet 1996 World Exposition. Building a public park for the global village. This has been a production of the Internet Multicasting Service. Your host was Marty Lucas.
Handcrafted by Becknell and Lucas.